Hello and welcome to another Inside College Hockey podcast. I'm Joe Gladyszewski, podcast host with Jess Myers and Mike Eidelbiss here. We'll talk about some issues from around college hockey, both on and off the ice, some coaching situations, some teams playing well, some teams playing poorly, as always. And we'll start in the WCHA, where the Minnesota Golden Gophers are all of a sudden a team that is playing poorly, and the North Dakota Fighting Sioux are a team that is playing well. Jess, you had a chance to see some of the series last weekend. Your impressions, and what do you think it meant in the big scheme of things for both teams?
Well, it's similar to a year ago in that, you know, what it means big picture, not only for both teams but for the WCHA, is that the race is wide open again. When it looked like Minnesota's race to win or lose, and it still may be Minnesota's race to win or lose, now all of a sudden they've got some competition. North Dakota talked about, you know, being a realistic shot for home ice now. You know, that most of the players figure, you know, talking to like Taylor Choinney, that they're probably out of the race for the league title with that horrendous November and December they had. But they're back. They're legit. They're doing what they thought they would be doing right from the start of the season, and, you know, take away that hiccup, and they look like the team that a lot of us thought they would be. That top line is just amazing. I mean, they just blow people away. Jonathan Toews, Ryan Duncan, and TJ Oshie were doing everything we had thought they would do. They're getting better goaltending. They've got a very solid defensive unit. Thorny, who I mentioned, great player, and came in here and swept Minnesota in Minneapolis for the first time since, I looked this up, since 1980, the same day that the Team USA beat Norway in Lake Placid in 1980 was the last time the Sioux had swept a series in Minneapolis.
Plus, you saw some of that on television. Your thoughts?
Well, at first blush, you have to say that it's certainly a great boost for North Dakota and a step back for Minnesota. But I mean, let's be realistic here. It's not going to make or break Minnesota's season, and it's not going to make or break North Dakota's season. I think it can certainly propel North Dakota in the right direction, and you know, it wasn't so much a hiccup that they had in November and December as much as it was like a full-blown case of asthma. I mean, they won one of eight games during that stretch when they seemingly couldn't do anything right. I think that, and again, North Dakota deserves all the credit in the world. They came out and they just absolutely drilled Minnesota. But I just think that the manner in which those games played out and the way the scores ended up, I mean, two big scores on Friday and Saturday night, I think maybe we're blowing this a little bit out of proportion as far as, you know, it's not the end of the world for Minnesota. And, you know, North Dakota doesn't automatically catapult themselves into the top five or six teams in the nation. I mean, certainly points them in the right direction, and Minnesota certainly has some regrouping to do, but let's look at it for what it is, which is two games on among a 36-game regular season schedule.
I think North Dakota is a good team. What they did last weekend is played themselves into consideration for the NCAA tournament. They didn't play themselves into consideration for a national championship. Not just yet. They haven't proven that to me, at least at this point, that they're at that level. Tournament team, probably. Final Five team in St. Paul, probably. But what else is there? I mean, are they one of several teams that could win a national championship? Yeah, but there's, I'd say, 10 to 12 of those teams. And if you're 500 now in the WCHA, I mean, they didn't they don't have a winning record in their league right now. The big picture there is there's still a lot of work left for them to do.
I want to just mention too, you know, on the Minnesota side of things, it was interesting to hear, you know, 11 months ago, I saw a Wisconsin team get beat badly two nights in a row at Minnesota State. And at that point, this was late February, you know, last season, I heard the coach and more than one Badger player used the term rock bottom, you know, that their team had sunk to its absolute lowest point and they had to start rebuilding. Interestingly enough, Saturday night, talking to Don Lucia, I heard the same term. He said, we've bottomed out, you know, and thankfully it's happening now in late January instead of happening in March. So, you know, maybe this is just part of a process. If you're a Gopher fan, maybe this just is part of the process you have to go through. And these runs we saw, you know, like Maine in 93, where you go through a season losing one game, you know, that's just not realistic with how competitive college hockey is anymore.
Didn't Minnesota bottom out in Maine last year, bottom out in March last year?
Yes, that's what we did.
So there you go, Minnesota.
And I mean, that was the point. If you're going to have a hiccup weekend, have it in January. Don't have it in North Dakota's building versus Holy Cross.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I think just maybe one final comment on that series and the fallout is that a lot of the emails we've seen are from North Dakota fans have been, oh, you've got them rated too low. You know, they're better than 15th. To a certain extent, I agree with them, but they haven't played better like the 15th team from day one of the season to this point we're at now, going into the first weekend in February. I think on paper they're, you know, if you look at their roster up and down with the talent they've got, certainly they're far better than a top 15 team. They probably are a top 5 team talent wise, but the results that I've seen from the first game of the season to where we stand right now, they haven't been consistent enough to warrant, I don't think at least, any better than where they are. And I think that as the season goes on, they'll continue to win and continue to climb. But, you know, they're 15th for a reason. And it's, you know, I'm not going to go nuts just because they beat Minnesota, certainly two big wins, but this team did not play very well in November, December, and you know, there was a lot of stuff going on back then, but you've got to look at the cumulative body of work. We just can't write off what happened when they won one out of those eight games.
But when I look at the power rankings right now, and from 1 to 14, these teams that are ranked ahead of North Dakota right now, if they were to play this weekend, I'd probably look for a split. So that means they're certainly are pretty much in the mix with, you know, the Minnesotas and Notre Dames and New Hampshire's of the world. You know, and then you've got that next tier of teams like Denver and St. Cloud and Michigan State and Miami and Clarkson. And then you've got your, you know, BU, I guess, in that group. And then Vermont, BC, Niagara, even those teams, you know, I think that they're all really pretty, you know, you've got to think that they all have the capacity and ability to beat the other team. I think this tournament's going to be wide open. I mean, absolutely wide open. And that will make the seeding process and maybe to some extent the regional process as far as which teams are sent where very important in this tournament. So the regular season always does carry a lot of weight, but we'll see what happens. It's going to be a wild, wild tournament this year.
Well, I guess I guess you kind of segue into a little bit of the NCAA tournament stuff. And one thing that became apparent to me, kind of as you look, putting together the 4x4 this week, and as you start to get toward that, the lower echelon of teams that, you know, have a chance to qualify for the, or be invited to the NCAA tournament, it's a real mess, to be honest with you. I mean, once you get into that 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 range, and we're not talking about the auto bids, just those at-large bids, once you get kind of into that, you know, those six or seven teams that are maybe battling for the final three or so spots, I mean, there's not a lot of difference. And when you look at a team and you think that you might be able to pinpoint the strength of theirs and say, you know, that team's will end up being in there. You look at another team and find another strength, or you look at them again and you say, well, here's a weakness they have, and here's a weakness, you know, these other guys have. It's there's a lot of sorting out left to do.
Let's move on to talk about the United States World Junior Championship team for the 2008 tournament. We certainly talked a lot about the tournament that ended earlier in the month of January. As the calendar now turns to February, the announcement was made recently by USA Hockey that John Hines will be the head coach of the United States entry at World Juniors next year. Hines, of course, is the coach of the National Team Development Program right now. A lot of people around hockey and college hockey in particular kind of stand on different sides of the fence with the National Team Program, and some have accused it of being elitist and exclusive. And I almost wonder if this selection, and you look at, I guess, even the selections of Ron Ralston and Mike Eaves to coach the World Junior teams, they had, they had ties to that program. Are they building a moat around themselves that kind of says, you know, the only way to get to the elite international competitions is by going through our program?
Wow, that's a good question.
That is a very good question. I guess
to a certain extent, I think you can say yes, because when the program started back 10 or so years ago, that was more or less the stated mission, is that we want to groom kids that will be successful, or groom kids who will be successful in international tournaments. I mean there's no question that that's ultimately the goal of the program in Ann Arbor. So, I mean, is that exclusionary? Yeah, I guess it is. I mean, but that's their stated mission, or it was when the program was developed.
Yeah, and I believe Herb Brooks, before his passing, was among those, Jessen, you probably have a better memory on this, he was among those who used to campaign saying that the money that they spend on just those 35 to 60 kids in Ann Arbor program would help hockey much more if it was spread out through youth organizations throughout the nation. Wasn't he on that side of the argument?
He was on that side of the argument. It's interesting you bring up the money side of it. One of the friend of mine who's pretty well connected in hockey, I won't name this person for obvious reasons, but a couple of years ago.
Because you're not a name dropper.
Wayne Gretzky.
I'm an accomplished name dropper. I just can't remember who it was. No, I'm kidding. This friend of mine who's well connected in college hockey and with USA Hockey and has been kind of a naysayer about the whole U.S. National Development Team idea. A couple of years ago, when Mike Eaves led Team USA to its first and so far only gold medal at the World Juniors, my friend pointed out to me, that was something like a $30 million investment that we paid for that gold medal. I mean, that's how much resource-wise has been devoted to the National Team Development Program. Now, that's my friend's words. That's not me coming down for or against it, because I certainly see it serving a purpose. And it we talked about this a year ago when teams were heading to Torino, that it is kind of fun to see some of these products start showing up on Olympic teams. But it has been very spendy, and it has been a controversial use of USA Hockey money.
And I guess, the point I made in kind of bringing this conversation up was, you look at the guys like Eaves and Ralston and now Hines, who have been in the program, have coached these kids before, and then were in charge of this World Junior team. When they had Scott Sandelin as the head coach of that World Junior team, again, Jess, I didn't do the research. He never was a part of that Ann Arbor program, was he?
No.
And then if you recall, results might point that when that happened, it was one of the poor recent United States performances at that tournament.
Well, Kyle, another case where the U.S. maybe underachieved from what people expected. Didn't do poorly. I mean, I wouldn't say poorly, but didn't earn a medal. Sandelin, same thing. And, it begs the question, you talk about these guys with the National Team Development Program pedigree, like Hines, like Eaves at the time, who had just fairly recently started at Wisconsin when he ran that team and led him to a gold medal. is it easier for guys to coach teams that they're familiar with as opposed to Scott Sandlin or Walt Kyle, who, you know, have limited opportunities? They have a camp, I think, in August where they get a look at these guys, and then they have to make, you know, final picks not too long before they head over to wherever the tournament is being played. It's a challenging situation for a coach to come into without that much background, I would say.
Well, I think you kind of just answered your own question there as far as, you know, one of the reasons why it makes sense to bring in an Eves or a Ralston or a Hines is that, you know, you are in this short schedule format where you only have a very finite amount of time to put this team together. And, you know, these guys have the advantage of being familiar with the kids. And, you know, as has been said all along, one of the stated purposes of this program is to groom kids and get them ready for the, you know, to play on an international stage. So if you've got, you know, a very limited amount of time to put a team together, who better than the guys, than coaches who are intimately familiar with the players' strengths and weaknesses to mold this team. I'm not saying it's the right way, but or the wrong way. I'm just saying that it seems to be the most efficient way, and I think that the recent results of these teams and when they've had people that have been with the development program coaching seem to bear that out.
Well, last weekend, just by dumb luck, I found what the element is that Team USA is missing and why they didn't win the gold medal and what they need next year if they want to win the gold medal. I talked to Jonathan Taves from North Dakota, who since returning from Sweden with Team Canada, where he won a gold medal, he has now 12 points in 6 games. So he's averaging 2 points a game, which is pretty good. I made a crack. I said, what did you eat over there in Sweden that gave you this burst of energy? Because if you remember, Taves, much like the rest of the Fighting Sioux, had just a horrendous first half of the year. I mean, way below expectations. He was injured for a time. Anyway, I said, you know, what was in the water? What did you have to eat over in Sweden that enabled this great second half you're having? He said, well, it wasn't Swedish food. He said, Hockey Canada sends our own team chef over with us to cook us stuff that we're used to every day. So apparently that's the key. We need more French fries and hamburgers next year in the Czech Republic. Send somebody over with the Americans and make sure they're getting their own fill of flapjacks every morning instead of herring and a lot of breads and sausage.
You got a problem with herring?
I wouldn't want to subsist on it, but I love herring.
We'll probably they could send over some of those military MREs, so those meals ready to eat. That would be tasty. You can
although I've heard those do funny stuff to your digestive tract. Let's say.
Well, let's keep that as hearsay.
Okay. Keep your shifts short.
There you go.
Be careful how you pronounce that.
Yeah, exactly.
Joe Gladyshefsky, ladies and gentlemen.
Jared from Subway will be named assistant coach of the United States World Juniors.
Yeah, so you're telling me that they had to send a chef over just to make pasta and chicken 20 times.
Apparently. Well, I asked him, you know, if you're cooking for a bunch of 20-year-old Canadians, what do you make? I was trying to get some, you know, kind of Tim Hortons crack out of them.
Macaroni and cheese.
Kraft dinner.
Yes, there you go. Kraft dinner. Kraft dinner and a Terrence and Phillip tape, and you're done.
Hilarious. Terrence and Phillip. Never gets old. Never, ever, ever.
It doesn't.
Hey, Terrence, pull my finger.
No, this is a monkey claw.
Pull harder.
Anyway.
Oh, good times had by all.
Why don't they just send, send over like some Hot Pockets for crying out. I don't know. You really need a chef, I mean.
Hey, gold medal. That's all I'm saying. It's a lot harder to cook in Celsius.
It is. You gotta have that 9/5 thing and add 32. And maybe
let's talk about everyone's favorite Monday Night Hockey tournament.
Wait, maybe that's the problem. Maybe the American chef is cooking everything in Fahrenheit.
That's probably what it is.
I think.
he got Celsius figured out, but now he just keeps getting arrested for speeding.
All right.
Maybe we should invest $30 million on the National Team Development Program Culinary Institute.
Wow.
We're hammering this.
This joke won't
go away. Let's joke about something else then. Boston hockey on a Monday night. We kid. Boston University,
because we
Boston
care.
College, Northeastern, and Harvard fans who may be tuned in. We thank you for listening to the Inch Podcast. And we have a beanpot situation here. Some might argue that it's among the most wide open of the recent tournaments. Harvard's record is certainly not reflective of their talent. Many teams in the ECAC Hockey League are very much surprised at where Harvard's standing is right now, and has a ton of respect for the Crimson's program. They're coming off a week with they were in two games, very close games in the North Country at St. Lawrence and Clarkson, after not playing for 3 weeks, and then had a road tie at Quinnipiac in the Bobcats' new barn. They get to play Union and Rensselaer this weekend, and then they're into the Beanpot tournament. Northeastern's a dangerous team that's proven capable of knocking off some quality opponents this year, and BC and BU have recently split. So we've got a lot of interesting storylines there. It almost reminds me of what we thought about the JLI earlier this season, another tournament that Harvard happened to be in, where Michigan Tech, traditionally a less favored team and not expected to win with the likes of Michigan State, and some of the invited schools that have participated in that tournament. Northeastern may relish that role too, and for the first time in some time, the Huskies could be playing the late game on the second Monday.
Boy, after all that hyping we did at Michigan Tech, I'm afraid to talk about Northeastern.
Yeah, no kidding.
Wow. John Barkin would be upset.
No.
If we slapped the podcast jinx on the Huskies.
On his beloved Huskies, yeah, that's true.
But give
no,
them
I mean, I would,
they did play well. Yeah, they drilled Maine at Maine this weekend, and on Friday, I think it was 6-1, and then they lost 2-1 Saturday. So, and they beat Michigan earlier this year. So there's no question that that program's moving forward.
Yeah, they have wins at Michigan, at Maine, and against Boston College in overtime. Also a 0-0 tie in early January against Boston University.
They know how to entertain you, and they know how to lull you to sleep.
Yeah. That means they're versatile.
That's right.
But, kind of one, I guess it's related to the Beanpot, but not specifically to what's going to happen this year. But just in general, I'll tune into the games on Monday. I honestly don't really care who wins, just as long as they're entertaining. But as somebody with no ties to any of the four schools, aren't you kind of pulling for somebody other than BU or BC to win this thing, honestly?
I'll tune in during the commercial breaks on Studio 60.
Or if I can muster enough any enthusiasm that I can muster as a non-biased viewer, I will throw toward the non-BC or non-BU entry.
Well, there you go. The first round matchups, by the way, are...
hey, thanks for validating my point. That's great, guys.
You know, no, but...
I like
me,
all 59 teams equally, except for the Huskies. Who I like more equally.
Let me just validate your point, if I can, Mike, because... And I've talked to people about this before. It's widely known. I went to Minnesota Duluth, and for that fact, I have been accused of being anti-Gopher in the past. And I refute that. I mean, you know, I don't have a favorite team other than my alma mater, probably, and you know, that's, they're frankly hard to root for sometimes, at least lately. but you know, I made this point as a writer and as someone who goes to games with the express job of telling a story once that game is over. For me, it's usually a more interesting story to tell if a team like Minnesota or a team like Michigan or a team like Boston University, a traditional powerhouse, if they get beat. It's a more interesting story. If, you know, if Minnesota wins its 29th consecutive game at home, that's not really that interesting. But if, likewise, North Dakota comes in, wins two there for the first time in whatever it was, 27 years, that's more interesting to write about. You know, I don't say I'm not saying I root for that, but from a writing standpoint, it's more fun to do that than to write the obvious story.
Amen
and
to
when
that.
When you point out that, you know, the top team has lost, the top team's fans say, "Why do you hate us?" And we say, "We have you ranked as the number one team in the country."
You're a hater.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
It's that
you get what you get.
Bias. It's East Coast bias.
But anyway, Monday's matchups, for those of you anxiously anticipating, Bean Pot Monday, February 5th, the early game, which I believe is a 5 p.m. start, is Harvard versus Boston University, and the night game is Boston College versus, you know, I screwed that up. BC and Harvard is the late game. BU Northeastern is the early game. So, there you go. BU Northeastern, 5 o'clock. BC Harvard, 8 o'clock. At the TD Bank North Fleet Garden Memorial Palace.
Park.
Of yellow.
Dog mascots early, non-dog mascots later.
Aha.
Yes.
Very nice.
Absolutely.
And that brings us to our next topic. Which of these four teams wear red uniforms?
Yeah, I was going to bring up their team colors, but we've been forbidden.
Nah. That's podcast infamy right there.
That is.
Mr.
Podcast death.
Mr. Fuji is waiting to...
team colors where
keep
podcasts go to...
Keep us in line. If
pretty much. Maybe we'll do that in the summer. We'll talk about colors in the summer. Not on the night of the selection show like we did last year. not always riveting. not always the riveting conversation you want to hear on the night of the selection show.
Yeah, exactly. What else going on out there, Bus? Any CCHA news? You went to that Miami Notre Dame game. Sunday.
I did. You know,
Saturday.
And I according to the South Bend Tribune, I missed Coach Chuck Weiss by one day. He was there on Friday, I'm told, or I read, which is a little bit of a disappointment, but hey, that's all right. Notre Dame had no business getting a point out of that game on Saturday against Miami. Thoroughly, not just outplayed, but Notre Dame was uncharacteristically sloppy. In the times that I've seen them this year, they've always been a very precision. They've run their systems with it's almost exquisite precision. Don't make a lot of mistakes. Very smart decisions. With and without the puck and with positioning. And in the first two periods of this game, they did everything wrong. Wes O'Neill, God bless him, he's a 20-year-old senior, for crying out loud. He doesn't turn 21 until, like, March 3rd or something like that. He almost made the most beautiful assist to a Miami guy in his own end. Tried to go from, like, the far goal line in the corner all the way across to the opposite blue line. I mean, everybody knew where this pass was going. I mean, that was just kind of indicative of how Notre Dame played through the first two periods. But yet, you know, they turned up the pressure in the third and ended up getting two goals, one on a nice face-off play. And the other one was just a hustle play on a loose puck in the slot, and the Notre Dame guy lunged, tip it past the Miami goalie. And the one thing that I kept thinking as the game progressed and Notre Dame came back to tie it was that, sometimes there are teams that, obviously are talented and win because they're just better. And other times, I'm not sure if Notre Dame is in this category, they're a very talented team, there's no question. But there are those teams that just seem to get breaks. They can play lousy for two periods and still be in it in the third and come back and earn a point in a game that they had no business really even being in. And, it left me wondering, is Notre Dame kind of one of those teams that's, not only talented but charmed to a certain extent? And after watching that game, I got to believe that they've got a little bit of mojo working in their favor as well, which is great because it's a good story, as Jess likes to hear.
Don't we all like a good story?
I think so. But
that reminds me of this time that I was at
band camp.
On the
I think
side
the car's got a flat, but no.
And you'll never guess who I ran into at the Piggly Wiggly. Miami bus on that side of the equation, that's another team that has two goaltenders. Charlie Effinger got yanked on Friday's loss. Zetkov played the last half of that game and didn't allow a goal, and then got the start on Saturday in the 2-2 tie for the Redhawks. Anything revealed on where the Redhawks may be going with that situation down the stretch? Do you think they'll still split time with the goaltenders?
I think they will still split time just because it's what they've done now for two seasons. If we remember, coming out of the World Juniors, where Zadkov started and didn't play particularly well the first couple of games over there for the U.S. team, he came back here and struggled a little bit. Well, now it seems like he's getting his groove back. If for people who watched the Notre Dame game, same initials. For people who watched that game, and it was televised in my neck of the woods, anyway. He was kind of hung out to dry a few times. Effinger did give up a couple softies, but there were a couple, the other two, I think Notre Dame scored four goals in something like the first 25 or 30, 28 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
A couple softies, but, a couple that he didn't have a lot of help on either. So I think they'll stick with it. It's what they've done up to this point, and I don't see Rico Blasi as the kind of coach who will panic just because a guy had a bad outing.
How about the Denver coaching tree, I suppose? Rensselaer's gone with two goaltenders most of the year, as has Miami, and Denver, of course, has. I'll be interested to see if, it's fun that coaches have their ways, and certainly some of it is circumstantial. You can't split time with goaltenders unless you've got two very good ones, or at least equal ones. But look at Seth Appert and Rico Blasi, who both learned a lot of their hockey underneath George Gwozdecki at Denver. And the goaltending tandems at those three schools in particular, it's kind of nice to see. Just interesting point to bring up. No real commentary. Other than that.
Go ahead.
On that topic of goaltending, though, Gladdy, and a guy who, and this is a stretch, but he grew up in Denver, didn't play there, but Mike Eaves, you mentioned goaltending tandems. I thought this was one of the more interesting developments from last weekend, in that the Badgers started Brian Elliott, as they do, let's face it, just about every night on Friday night versus Minnesota State, got beat at the Kohl Center. Eaves came back the next night with Shane Connolly, And Connolly gets a win versus Minnesota State, and now, you know, I'm going to explore this a little bit in my notebook, but, you know, the talk is there suddenly a goalie controversy in Madison with Elliott's struggles kind of mirroring the struggles of the Badger offense, and, you know, he's statistically been very good but just hasn't gotten any help. And, you know, now you wonder with Shane Connolly getting a win in kind of a situation where you – wouldn't have seen him. You know, last year he played some, but it was due to Elliott being injured. What's going on goaltending-wise in Madison?
We will keep our eye on that.
Well, don't you think, too, to a certain extent with what's going on there, that that Wisconsin and the coaching staff has to be realistic about, you know, where they're heading? You know, they can still get into the top five, but anything beyond that, you know, NCAA tournament-wise, they're going to have to put together a heck of a run if they want to be even considered for that. Do you think maybe some of it is, well, we've got this guy and he's going to be here for another 2 years. We've got to find out what we've got and give him a shot. I mean, is there some of that at work too?
I would certainly think there's some of that. And if you look at, you know, kind of the MO for the way they treat goaltenders in Madison, it's very rare to see a kid come in and play a lot as a freshman or a sophomore. I mean, it's a goaltending factory. Let's face it, with some of the guys that they've produced out of there over the last 20 years, Wisconsin is a goaltending factory, but even a kid like Brian Elliott hadn't ever seen significant time between the pipes until the start of last season, until the start of his junior season. So the idea is, and Elliott talked about this, you come in and you meet with Bill Howard, who's been their goalie coach forever, and he completely breaks down your game and says, everything you were doing before, you're going to stop doing that, and you're going to do it my way, and it may take 2 years. So, you know, maybe this is the start of Shane Connolly's future as the next Badger goaltender.
Bill Howard did a great job with Turk Broda.
Turk Broda.
He's been there a long time, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, he definitely has been there a long time.
You know,
who was the guy on the Badgers last year that said he was roommates with Chelios?
Oh, Ross Carlson, wasn't it?
Ross Carlson.
Oh, yeah, that was...
Okay. We're getting into...
He's like 26, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, I think so. And he's a senior.
Hey, if I could do it all over again, I'd be a senior when I was 26, too. More power to you.
I look forward to being a senior next year when I'm 26.
Being a college athlete in Madison, boy, you'd want to get out of that atmosphere
I can see where that... I can see where that life would get old.
I remember that back in high school, people said, what advice would you give to today's high school kids about going to college? I'm like, don't leave.
Stay there.
Go to college forever.
Get like 5 bachelors and then get like 3 masters, but easy ones, like ones like mine where you didn't have to write a thesis.
Yeah.
Hey, people wonder why the movie Old School had so much appeal. It's because that's every guy's dream when he's 32. Be living back on a college campus again.
My luck it would be BYU.
So I got this sweet apartment over by UW-Superior. And, no.
And I'm heading to the Cove tonight.
The Cove Cabaret. I had a good friend of Inch, by the way, tell us last week, gentlemen, that our podcast was 52 minutes long, but if we cut out all the giggling, it would have been 38 minutes. So we've got to watch how much self-amusement we have.
We've had very little so far today.
You worry about your own self-amusement.
guys, let me make one last attempt at hockey talk before we have the complete podcast deterioration.
I still had something to say about the 2 goalies, but I'll save that for later.
Well, we can come back to it.
No. We'll talk about it some other time.
I was just going to talk about the chill a little bit.
I'm going to make a note.
Things have gone very well for Clarkson. They're fighting some injuries right now, and they've got road games at Cornell and Colgate this weekend. So we'll see what the Golden Knights can do with those. And for the Golden Knights and their travel partner, St. Lawrence, who stands atop the ECAC Hockey League standings right now, after these road games at Cornell and Colgate, their last six games, this is how they close the season, home games, and obviously this goes for both teams because they're travel partners, home games against Brown, Yale, Union, and Rensselaer, four in a row. Then the last weekend of the season, they're at Princeton and Quinnipiac. So
that's five of the – it's really the bottom five in the league, correct? Plus
yeah,
Quinnipiac?
Yeah, the bottom five other than Quinnipiac. Well, Harvard's not in that mix, but standing-wise they are in the bottom five.
Yes.
So favorable schedule for the North Country clubs on their way out. And St. Lawrence has three losses in the league. Two of those are to Clarkson. So we'll see if that 4 points makes a difference down the stretch. And I'll be getting a look at the Saints this weekend. So we'll have some reports on the fighting Saints up there. And we'll see what else happens down the stretch here.
So when's the last time you saw the Saints? A couple weeks ago?
I saw the Saints in mid-December.
Oh, okay.
And I saw them on TV against Clarkson last week.
That's right.
They had a 2-0 lead at home and then lost 6-2.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. But they responded with 4 points against Harvard and Dartmouth.
So. Yes, they did.
So it's how you play your next game, I suppose, not how you played your last period. And St. Lawrence is taking care of it every week, kind of just plugging away, picking up their points, and they're in first place as a result.
And from the North Country, briefly, let me just go north to the future. To update the story we talked about last week in Alaska, the Alaska Anchorage coaches situation is stable for the time being, let's say. The school put out a press release a day or two ago saying that they have concluded their search for a new coach that was mandated by the U.S. Labor Department. They have determined that they already have the most qualified candidate on the job in Dave Shayak, and they will not be interviewing anyone or entertaining any further candidates for their head coaching job. They had five people apply, and it's up to you to argue whether or not they were qualified. I had some vehement feedback saying none of them were, and it's a joke to say anybody was qualified for that job. But that's where we stand right now. We'll see if the U.S. Department of Labor has anything further to say on the matter.
I heard Nick Saban applied.
Doesn't surprise me.
No, he vehemently said he's going to be the coach at Alabama, and he's staying. And why would we not believe him?
This is the job I've always wanted. I have no reason to look anywhere else, Saban said.
P.S., you're a jerk for asking that question.
Yeah.
Who
do you think you are? Is that it? Are we done podcasting?
Why not?
Do you want to talk about your double goalie thing, Buzz, or no?
No, I'm going to save it. I'm going to file that nugget away.
All right, enjoy the podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it.
We'll talk about that the night of the selection show.
Yeah. When none of them are playing. And they're all out of the playoffs. No, we'll talk about it. I don't know. We'll talk about it at some point.
We should have a show after the seedings are announced where we just talk about like teams that are done. And, you know, hey, you know who I never liked? Now that they're out of there. You know who I thought was brutal?
We'll bag on.
I saw this team play five times and every night. No heart. None. Zero.
You can bag on the teams and the seniors because you'll never have to see them again.
Exactly. Every team that didn't make the NCAA tournament had terrible senior leadership.
Yeah, you bag on the seniors and you laugh, and then 2 years later you run into them like at the lumber department at Home Depot, and they hit you with a 2x4 because that's where they're working now.
Like Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Mr. Myers, would you like me to help you to your car?
Wow.
That would be an entertaining podcast.
We don't do that.
We're only 6 weeks from...
that would be our first one.
Yeah, we don't do an entertaining podcast. That's right. We're just here. We're just here to burn up bandwidth.
This is not about entertainment, folks.
No.
Along the lines, Jess, of the comment about the giggling taking 38 minutes out of the 58-minute podcast or whatever it was. We're glad that we can help all of you. And if you're listening this long, we know you're in for the long haul. We're glad that we can help you make it through your workday, because that's most of the feedback I've gotten. I love putting it on at work. It passes, like, the whole afternoon just because it gets them away from whatever TPS reports or whatever they're working on. So
I agree.
But thanks for listening. Enjoy Mic Check. Enjoy this week's notebooks from our writers across the nation. Lots of stuff in there. As always, with minimum coach speak, which is good.
Oh, you know one note that I caught somewhere today? I don't remember where I saw it. Ash Goldie used to play for Michigan State a couple years back.
Yes.
About 3 years back.
Yes.
He was a contestant on The Price is Right today.
Was he really?
Yes, he was.
I read that note. That was from our friend Paul Shaheen on Research on Ice.
That's right. Shaheen. That's where I saw it.
Nice.
And in the same...
In
Mr. Shaheen's same Research on Ice daily mailing, he noted that MSU has got a verbal commitment from a recruit from Whitehorse in the Yukon Territory.
Outstanding.
What's AP style for that?
I don't know. It's not called.
We'll
like,
have to find
it's
out.
Not Nunavut or anything, is it?
We'll get.
No, I think
you can scribe James Yonke on that. Also, a stickler for perfect copy.
Yeah, so he is.
Shout outs to Yonke.
He's a stickler for perfect copy, so he'll never last with Inch.
Yeah, holla.
It was Promovius. I'll get a job in the show and he'll get promoted.
Not.
Should we share the Inch feed on the ESPN chat 2 weeks ago? Well, I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, come on. I don't know the story. Oh, yeah. I know that story.
Glad he's got his own private story.
I know the story.
These are the stories that you like to report on, Jeff.
We don't want
to hear about Minnesota.
We're going to write a book about these hidden stories.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, let's just say in our weekly chat at ESPN.com, a question was written directly to Yonke.
And what did it say?
Well, I don't know if it was a comment. It was a question more as much as it was a comment.
No, it was a question, I think.
Oh, I think I recall this.
It was
complimenting Mr. Yonke's taste in companions.
Sure. Why don't we just say it? How hot is Yonke's wife or something like that?
Yeah, that's a question.
Any of the kids from the elementary school who are still listening, time to go to bed, kids.
This is podcast MA, mature audiences only.
Jeff, do any, or Bus, do any of the readers of Inch know your wives and what they look like?
Wow.
No. Well, I don't know.
Wow.
Well,
good question.
Well, my dad reads Inch, and he's not my wife.
Yeah.
My dad, too. You read it.
I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
I don't know. Good question.
But that's just kind of out of left field.
If I got feedback from somebody I didn't know.
And in defense of Yaki, he said, that must be from Koepke.
This is the part where everybody just clicks off, right?
This is the weekly podcast deterioration.
You know, that's a good question, though, because you asked, does anybody know what our wives look like? And, I mean, the answer is no, because when we go places, you know, we're kind of, you know, when we go to a regional or the Frozen, which is kind of our big public appearances, so to speak, I mean, we're working so much that there really isn't any free time for anything else. You know? So.
That is true.
So generally we don't. So then we generally, and plus we like to sleep five and six of us to a room to save money. So, so generally.
Well, and people don't know what we look like either. We're on that newfangled internet.
We're on the interweb.
I mean, except for Jess, who's a frequent guest on.
He's been on TV.
Television. Oh, not Jess Myers.
Not in a long time. Not since my dad was taping it on his Betamax.
All right. Wait.
I did some TV, and they said, we want to de-emphasize your appearance.
Yeah, I was on TV, and they digitized my face. I didn't quite understand... I'm not any witness. Like, what do you think? I'm Sammy the Bull Gravano or something? Protect
my identity. They had the blue dot. Bus, not his real name.
I stopped recording like 15 minutes ago.
Awesome.
Thank God.
I'm just kidding.
But we can't edit this.
We can.
But we won't.
No, we won't.
And we haven't.
Can you wrap this up? I got to blow my nose. I'm just...
Yeah, let's wrap it. Thanks for listening to the Inch Podcast.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, San Diego.
Drive home as fast as you can.
You say classy, Oswego.
Classy, Oswego.
I'm Ron Burgundy?
All right, we're done.